What's up, everybody? I'm back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast where I have Prince Philip of Serbia. He's the man. We had an outstanding conversation. We talk about nation state adoption, what it's like orange pilling a bunch of countries around the globe, monarchies, versus democracy, a bunch of other topics, and he's a Bitcoiner through and through. So the man, Prince Philip, is legit. And I actually got to meet him while I was in Madeira, and it was awesome getting to know him, having a beer, and just kind of chit-chatting. So, awesome guy, really great conversation, and yeah, it's one of my favorites that I've dropped here in recent memory. So, be sure to tune in, and remember, ladies and gentlemen, this is not financial advice. Everything you hear in this podcast should not be taken as financial advice. And hit that subscribe button. Help your boy out. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Spread it around to the good word of people around the podcasting world. And big shout out to the sponsor. Shout out to Orange Pill App, the number one place where you can connect with fellow Bitcoiners. You can find merchants that accept Bitcoin around the globe. And find like-minded people. You could tell me how you feel about the episode on that app. Search for me, Green Candle. And yeah, heckle me, tell me I'm I looked funny on camera on YouTube, or tell me that I you know, maybe my voice is annoying or my voice is great. I don't know. Just hit me up on the Orange Pill app. And the number one place where I get all my information is BitcoinNews.com. I go down there to check everything out. I go to you know, get the most latest up to date things. And they've also got a great newsletter that comes out every single Monday that lets me prep for the entire week of what has happened and sees what happened last week. So be sure to subscribe to that. I got that link in the show notes to subscribe to their newsletter. And lastly, big shout out to Bitcoin Racing, the boys, Primetime, Chris McKenzie, and the fellas just unveiled their Mini Cooper. It looks absolutely sick. It's got the Green Candle logo in the front. So shout out to the boys out there. So, enough with that. Let's get into the episode. Whoosh. Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast where I've got Prince Philip of Serbia, of Yugoslavia, formerly of Yugoslavia at this point, but now he's back in Serbia. And we met in Madeira at the Bitcoin Atlantis conference, and there's a lot of stuff going on. You're now working with Jan3 and Samson Mao, bringing up nation state adoption to Bitcoin to countries around the globe. But I want to start off with Javier Milei, because obviously he just got elected into Argentina, into power in Argentina, becoming the president of Argentina. And he's a little bit more of a firecracker. So, you know, we've had Bukele in El Salvador, Lugano, some small cities kind of pop up here and there adopting Bitcoin. But Javier Milei is more of a controversial figure. So do you think, like, right off the bat, is he more of a positive to kind of help you orange pill some nation states? Or because of his controversial nature, is it making that conversation a little bit more difficult off the beginning because he just kind of comes at some people?
I like this, Brandon. Straight into the deep end. It's really good to be on your show, Brandon. It was great to meet you back in Madeira. That was one hell of a conference. So yeah, about Javier Milei. Where can I start with him? He gave us Bitcoiners a lot of hope when he won the elections in Argentina. Given that he speaks like an Austrian. Like a Rothbardian, he was hitting the nail on the head with a lot of good economic points. Getting rid of central banking was one of them. Dollarization of the economy, okay, but of course openness to Bitcoin and we all know his other policies, I guess. But I guess getting into power and having to play the local politics scenes is a different story. Not that I'm saying I'm pro or against Milei. I think that Milei has shown that he's capable of doing some good things in Argentina, and he probably will. But then he has to play to the politics and of the international geopolitical scene. And there's some things I've seen him do that I'm not very favorable of. I mean, he went to meet with Clinton That wasn't very cool. He's recently, I don't know too much about the law, but he's saying that Bitcoin exchanges or so forth need to be regulated a little bit, or actual Bitcoin needs to be regulated or something like along those lines. Wasn't too big fan of that. I'm not going to get into his side or what side he's on in the current Middle East conflict, but I saw some things there that I wasn't too happy about. But we're not going to talk about that. maybe it's best to stay clear of that. So I've got a big question mark. I've put a huge question mark over him. As a character, he is, you know, great character. He's got huge likability. He's got his crazy haircut. He speaks incredible. He can gather a crowd. He can really get, you know, he can really get his ideas across to people, and he can really just get the party started, I guess, with his people and stuff. And he won like soundly in his country. So it really got us all excited. But what I'm seeing right now is like he's having to play as I said, being a politician. And Argentina is not the size of El Salvador. Bukele has had a much bigger majority, and Bukele has a much different situation. I think another Bukele we won't ever see for a while, but I'll never say never. You know, Bitcoin bull runs can change that completely. But Argentina is a bigger country. It's much more complex, bigger monetary history and stuff. But it's obviously very clear what they need. It's very clear what the world needs. But I'm going to say that, you know, big question mark over Milei right now. I want him to do better. So we tried to meet him with that when I was in Argentina with Samson at La Bitcoin Conf. This was in November 2022. And I don't know what happened, but that meeting didn't go through. And that was before, obviously, he was elected. And I wish we met with him, but it didn't happen. But we're hopefully trying to push for a meeting with him, and we'll see what happens from there. I mean, it will be fantastic if he had some sort of, quasi adoption of Bitcoin and some forth, some sort, maybe some openness to all currencies like the libertarian that he is. So let's see, is he really libertarian? Is he really Rothbardian, or is he pulling our legs? You know.
that's some great points. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, he's had some kind of questionable decisions following it, but it does seem like his economic policies seem to be more in line with like the Bitcoin side of things. So we'll see where it goes. I for one, am always kind of questionable skeptical when it comes to politicians, especially when they're, you know, got to be elected to be in power, because in the end, you know, they're going to want to be in power. So they're going to say what they think is going to help them get more votes. But Bukele is a very interesting kind of case study. And, there is a little bit of a difference I see in personality, right? I mean, you kind of describe Milei with his crazy haircut. He's very, you know, outlandish, very, I can't think of a good word, but very I wouldn't say in your face, but very like animated.
Flamboyant.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good way to describe it there.
Yeah.
So, but it seems like Bukele is a little bit more reserved, right? And he seems like, daggers.
I think Bukele gets it. Maybe Milei is a talker and Bukele is actually a doer. So there's a difference there. And Milei is a politician. Bukele isn't a politician, essentially. Bukele comes from money. He doesn't need to, can't be bought out, whereas Milei can. There's differences there. And this is what the problem is with democracies, really, if we come down to what the root cause of the issue is. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I actually just was listening to your podcast with Saifedean, where you guys kind of got into the differences between democracies and monarchies. So, with Bitcoin, right? I mean, obviously, it's more of, getting rid of the central banks, you know, be your own bank, that kind of aspect of things like self-sovereignty. So do you think, going forward is, you know, I guess more of a democracy kind of world, or a world ruled by democracy, is that, I guess, fit for Bitcoin? Or do you think like more, we'll move to more of like a monarchy kind of standard? Like, how do you think this whole like Bitcoin standard, as like a globe and countries and nation states start to adopt, how do you think that kind of, moves the needle in a sense?
Depends in which country, in which area, but I will see some countries will formally adopt Bitcoin, will start using Bitcoin more and more. And this will not be from a top-down approach, but also from what Bitcoin is, it's a bottom-up approach. It's a grassroots thing. It's pure decentralization. It's the internet, but money, the base layer of money. You know, it's unstoppable. So you will see it grow in a lot of areas. So regardless of what the politics say, people will start to get wealthier, and they will start to get more sovereign as a result. That's what Bitcoin does. That's what it's meant to fix. So I think, you know, from now until, let's say, the next 10 years, we have a couple of election cycles happening all around the world. You will probably start to see, especially after this bull run, I think this bull run will be different. Everyone says that, you know, this time it's different, but I think it will be different because of the lack of paper Bitcoin out there. And then we have some big bullish drivers like the spot ETFs, which I'm not a fan of, but they are very bullish. We have huge supply constraints right now. There's going to be one hell of a supply shock happening. So this bull run will be different, and it's going to obviously wake up a few people. Not wake up, but it's going to get a few people interested. You know, the sentiment's going to make people say, "Oh, you know, people are going to YOLO into it," and all that sort of stuff. So this will start to get politicians and people interested. So I think you'll start to see politicians start to using it more on their platforms in the coming years. And so then you will see a top-down approach. And that's what we do at Jan 3, is we fully understand that Bitcoin's a bottom-up. It's, as I explained, as we agree upon. But we think that maybe there's an opportunity that to lend a hand top-down, to start working with governments. I say working, meeting with governments and educating them about what Bitcoin is and what it can do and how it can transform their countries. And if they don't really adopt it or be kind to it, then someone else will, and that they will become eventually obsolete, because as we know, money will tend to one. It will tend to the strongest form of money. People will start to realize what Bitcoin is, and it's the strongest money that's ever been created or discovered, however you want to look at it, and everyone will tend to want to own it. So there's going to be a point where governments will be pushed to address the situation. Some will be kind and some will not. So we're there to meet with the governments who have an interest with it. We meet with we've met with various leaders around the world, politicians around the world, and there is interest. But as I mentioned before, there's no Bukele out there at the moment. And Bukele was an outlier, and I think will remain an outlier. But as I said, bull markets can change that.
Yeah. And so, like, with the, you know, I guess I want to get into the ETFs and everything like that in a little bit. But, you know, with that, I guess what it does is does bring a lot more attention towards Bitcoin, right? I mean, obviously, BlackRock, and a lot of the big
money. It brings in institutional attention, corporate attention, and attention from companies or individuals or institutions that weren't able to get, it's not direct exposure, but weren't able to buy Bitcoin because of some regulatory constraints or so forth. But now they're able to. And you can see the demand there. They're sucking up coins like there's no tomorrow. So it's insane, really. And that's pre-halving as well. So post-halving, you know, we're looking at about 4,000. I think it was 4,000. I forgot the math, but let's say it's about 4,000 coins being sucked up a day on average. And we have 900 coins being produced right now every day mined. That's going to get halved to 450. So, I mean, that's the math says it's going to go boom. It's going to really, we're going to get the, as Samson calls it, the Omega candle.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, we saw too, at one day, BlackRock itself, just the BlackRock ETF, which is just one of the 11 in the US, mm-hmm. gobble up 10,000 coins in one day. Just because they saw that it was like a Wednesday, I think, back in March when they saw, I think it went from like, you know, maybe $5,000 or $10,000 up. So it went from 50 to about 60 and whatnot. So
right, yeah,
yes. We're seeing it scoop up just at an astronomical amount. And it seems like, yeah, there's just, I guess there's nowhere else to go except for up. But with this, do you think that this is kind of helping, I guess, your conversations at Jan 3, like some of the politicians so far? Or have you still kind of seen more of like a tentative nature when you're bringing Bitcoin to some of the governments and trying to orange pill some of these nation states?
Well, it's always been difficult, and it will remain difficult until there's more interest. But yes, the spot ETFs have given more credibility, credence to Bitcoin. So we have more interest, and have spoken to some corporations about it, thanks to the spot ETFs. Obviously, the conversation is, yes, the spot ETFs, but then there's the Bitcoin, the real thing that you need to be getting. That's why obviously we're not fans of the spot ETFs, because at the end of the day, it's these massive behemoth organizations like the likes of BlackRock have an enormous amount of Bitcoin on their balance sheets. And then that opens up the possibility of those Bitcoins being seized or controlled by other entities that are not friendly towards Bitcoin. But at the end of the day, they're not running nodes. They're not mining. So they can't really do much about it. You know, concentration in Bitcoin is not an issue. So whatever, let them do their thing, and we'll just benefit from the price even further. So yeah, but yeah, talking about interest, we have had more interest. Yeah, I'd say there has been an uptick in interest thanks to the spot ETFs. Definitely, there was a notable difference after January 12th. But also, I think that's also thanks to the bull market getting kicked off again early. I mean, we've seen record highs now pre-halving, which has never happened before. So it's looking good.
Yeah. And so like when, you know, obviously, you know, pre-halving, you work with Samson, he talks about the Omega candle. You know, obviously price is kind of one of those things that, you know, Bitcoiners like kind of like to talk about. They kind of don't, because obviously one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin right at the end of the day. But, you know, that dollar exchange rate that we have does turn a lot of heads. So, you know, what do you think, I guess, is going to be the biggest driver, or what do you use when you're bringing to nation states to start to, you know, I guess, adopt Bitcoin, whether it's legal tender or just like minimize taxes? Like, what are some of the things?
Good question. Yeah, it's it depends on the individual and the country. Our strategy really is that if we have a connection to a government, we will try and formally make that meeting. But then we also rely on Bitcoiners on the ground. We rely on a lot of really great Bitcoiners all over the world who approach us all the time, knowing that we're the nation state adoption company and Bitcoin company. And so they ask for help. And so we create like a Telegram group, and we strategize about how we can meet with so-and-so politician or leader. And then the conversations we have can be ranging from, yeah, let's try and get try to push for legal tender, or just better regulation, better laws, to just talking about mining. I feel that mining is a conversation that's proving more successful these days, and I think that's given the fact that legal tenders is what directly, well, it's what the legal tender. I mean, adopting Bitcoin as a payment system is basically saying that your currency is going to become obsolete, or there's something better. So if you're giving the public the option and you're going to give them Bitcoin, you're basically signaling to them, okay, you know, we have fiat and we have Bitcoin. And we're seeing this in El Salvador. Of course, people in El Salvador weren't quick to adopt Bitcoin in a flash. We're only seeing low levels in the, I'm not too sure what it is today, but when I was there in 2022, I think it's only a few percent of the population actually using Bitcoin, but it's there, it's available. And Bukele is speaking about it. And they don't know a lot of the public there really don't know the advantage they have over the rest of the world. But it's slowly happening that people have the option to transact in dollars and save in Bitcoin. And of course, the option to transact in Bitcoin as well. But who's when they realize that the dollar is losing, let's say 7-8% a year, and that's officially they're saying 3-4% now, but unofficially we're looking at much higher numbers, because obviously the official numbers are massaged quite a lot. We all know that. So yeah, they will, as I said before, money will tend to one. People will see that Bitcoin is not only just a good payments network, but a great store of value. So that conversation there is a tricky one, because as I said, it's directly opposing fiat. But talking about the other thing that Bitcoin fixes, which is energy markets, that's an interesting conversation. If we have energy, and if you have a surplus of energy, or even if you have an energy problem in your country, you need to find more energy, Bitcoin can help you with that. That need for more energy is great for development, for civilization. You know, we didn't get to where we are by not using up energy. And this drive that's happening around places like the European Union and let's say in the States and Canada, where they're trying to push for green energy laws, it's just ultimately going to bring people back, us, civilization, back to the dark ages. We didn't get to where we are by running windmills. So I think Bitcoin, the energy that the mining side is helping to orange pill governments, because they realize that that's an untapped monetary source over there. That, you know, if you have surplus energy here, or if you want to find another energy source there, that Bitcoin drives that search for new sources of energy, or for using stranded energy to strengthen grids. Or like what we're seeing in Canada, we're seeing that being used to flare-offs, mining, using that instead of wasting those flare-offs and burning them off, where they're tapping that energy and we have less emissions. I mean, if you believe in that whole carbon thing, that's great, you know. But obviously, there's a whole big side of Bitcoin that's they don't want to see that narrative get too far, but obviously that narrative is easily being crushed right now. But we've seen the likes of Greenpeace, who are funded by people by the Ripple lot, trying to push the anti-green narrative that Bitcoin is not. But obviously we're using that skull with the exhaust coming out of it to our favor, and it's actually saying no, it's a good thing. I know, this is what I love about Bitcoin. It's completely anti-fragile at its finest. And I think, yeah, going back to the energy thing, it's what's driving a lot of people there's a lot of interest coming from the energy side. What we do is we can create these public-private partnerships where mining companies and ourselves we can set up a joint venture with the government, meaning that the government is starting to mine Bitcoin, and that is essentially some sort of adoption. And that means if they're mining Bitcoin openly, that means they will tend to be kinder to Bitcoin through in other ways, like regulation and so forth. And maybe they will start to get more interest. So it's basically education through practice. And I think that's going to drive a bit of adoption going forward. But who knows? This bull market is going to be fun.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think everybody just needs to buckle up, because I don't know if we've really seen, you know, all of these, like, you know, factors that are kind of coming to fruition right now, right? I mean, the spot ETFs, just a ton of financial money coming in. We're seeing, like, now multiple nation states kind of at least talking about it, and Bitcoin being on the ballot even in the US, right, with RFK Jr. mentioning it, and like a lot of politicians, like, all over. And so, you know, I guess you mentioned the energy side of things now, and it's kind of like different depending on what nation state you're trying to orange pill. Now, I think it's kind of curious here with, like, you know, there's obviously like El Salvador, right, which is on a dollar standard. They didn't have their own currency. So, you know, are you finding the energy side of things, like, I guess, more of a conversation you're having with maybe countries like the US, or, you know, countries like, you know, major European countries who are potentially facing some energy issues, and kind of going through there, go ahead.
Yeah, no, we are not really speaking to the European Union much, for obvious reasons, because they have a sovereignty issue. The individual countries there, they are not sovereign. And there's an issue there that they have this an unelected body governing them, sending them directives of what to do. And it's very difficult to speak to politicians in the European Union. So that's a problem, but that's not stopping us from speaking to companies and individuals there. But outside the EU in Europe, yes, we've spoken to some nation states about the energy advantages of Bitcoin. And in America, again, I think America doesn't really have that much of an issue with that, with mining. I think maybe it's probably a good thing to be speaking to other countries to try and decentralize the mining grid a little further. Canada, it's out of the question at the moment. But then in countries like in Central America, there's a lot of interest there. We've been speaking to Costa Rica. I know recently they've been proposing this one law. It's not getting much attention in the public in Costa Rica, but it's not very, let's say, crypto friendly. So we've been working with a congresswoman Yolanda Yobando. I completely forget her name, but I'm sorry I forgot your name. But she's a libertarian. She understands Bitcoin and she gets it, and she was trying to push for it, but she's having a hard time there, as Costa Rica claims itself as being a very highly developed democracy, very much like Switzerland, but with that, let's say, constraints of a democracy, decision making there is always going to be slowed down because there's so many hoops you have to jump through, and a lot of decision making processes, a lot of lobbying and X, Y, and Z to happen before anything can happen. And right now, there's some forces against Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. I have to hate to say that they are all grouped together in that respect when they're spoken about the government. But we have spoken to some hydroelectric plants there, and they're mining Bitcoin. So it's a matter of these guys have taken the initiative to start mining Bitcoin because they can't do anything with their reserve energy, with their surplus energy during the raining season there. They have a lot of energy that's at surplus and they can't sell it on, but now they're realizing that they can mine that. And then if you get more public hydro plants or even private ones working to mine Bitcoin and then using that to create money to then fund infrastructure projects, so you can have money to spend on building roads and strengthening grids or improving schools or whatever. It's essentially free money if you've got the energy, and this is the stupid thing that countries aren't getting for many reasons. So you don't have to tax your citizens. You know, if you have energy, you don't need to tax anyone.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I never even really thought of it that way, where it's like, all right, you can use the surplus energy to avoid taxes, which would be, you know, just outstanding. But it's interesting that you said like Canada is like completely out of the question, because there's a lot of, you know, publicly traded Bitcoin mining companies that have a lot of hydro powered, facilities.
I meant out of the question government wise. Currently,
yeah.
Pierre Poilievre, whatever his name is, gets in, yeah. that's a different topic. But under Trudeau, yeah, we know where that conversation is going.
exactly, right. But I want to jump into the ETFs. We brought it up a little bit earlier, mm-hmm. and I believe you have a traditional finance background, or at least you've worked a little bit in that space. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and I guess like your viewpoints on the spot ETF products?
Sure. So I have almost 15 years experience in TradFi, as we Bitcoiners like to call it, traditional finance. 10 of those were in asset management. And I was working for a quantitative equities team. We were doing factor investing, basically using models to balance equity only, but balancing a portfolio of equities based on their scores of value, growth, sentiment, momentum, or quality, and then we will try and choose companies, the best companies out of that from their scoring there. I mean, it was interesting when I was there, and I wasn't very educated in finance, in Bitcoin, which is true finance. But it was, I met a lot of fantastic people, individuals, a lot of smart guys. But then, you know, as I start to learn more about Bitcoin, that's where my interests start to diverge. And I first learned about Bitcoin. I mean, I first heard about it 2012, but that was just like, you know, instantly dismissed it as like magic internet money. Then it wasn't until 2017 that I actually bought my first Bitcoin, and it was interesting. And I thought, wow, this is really, really cool. But I was distracted by other shit coins. And then it wasn't until 2020 when the pandemic happened that it kind of aroused my interest. Like this monetary situation going around the world with all the stimulus and quantitative easing again, really, I had to question it, and I dug into Bitcoin deeper. Knowing that you have to have some answer. And I started reading books like the Bitcoin Standard, like GG's 21 Lessons. I joined Bitcoin Twitter. And then within months, I was like, well, you know, laser eyes and things like that. I was like, this is it. This is the future. I've got the keys of the future in my pocket. And it was fantastic. It was an eye opener. It didn't happen suddenly, but it was actually more of a gradual opening thing. But, you know, things like all of a sudden, like, you know, the difficulty adjustment was one big eye opener as well. It's beautiful learning about the difficulty adjustment, because that's kind of what glues all the technology behind Bitcoin together. It's a bit like the how in the fiat world, like the interest rates is what they use to cool or to heat up markets. Whereas in Bitcoin, they use a difficulty adjustment to cool or heat or to drive the hash rate. I mean, to control the hash rate, so we're not mining too fast. It's beautiful. I mean, when I learned about that, I was like, that was incredible. Then seeing it happen, the most amazing case study was the China ban. And seeing like China having that huge concentration of the hash power, you know, there's about 60% of it. And then when they banned it, that huge readjustment, downward adjustment and the difficulty adjustment in it, and then how Bitcoin just decentralized even further. It was anti-fragile at its finest. And then you just like, you know, you cut the head of the beast, and then there's like 50 heads that grow more, and it's just incredible. So yeah, learning all about this while still working in traditional finance, I was, you know, really starting to question my moral compass was being questioned, basically. And I was like, what am I doing in this traditional finance world? Yeah, and nice people around me, a lot of them are really fiat-y as well. You know, a lot of them don't like Bitcoin, but okay, you know, they don't really get it. I understand that. And I moved to Serbia during the time when I also became, I guess, orange-pilled. And one thing led to another, and yeah, I went public on Bitcoin on a big TV talk show here I was on the talk show with my wife, and I dropped the force. The host asked me about crypto. I said it's not about crypto; it's all about Bitcoin. Spoke 3 minutes about it, and the next thing I know, that went viral. And then I'm on Safedean's podcast. I'm on Daniel Prince's podcast. That was the first podcast I ever went out to. And big shout out to Daniel Prince, because he took me under his wing, and we went to Miami together. Next thing you know, I was having breakfast at Sailors with the president of Madeira. And I was at the conference. I met Samson, and Samson offers me a job at Jan 3. And I was like, oh, yeah, why not? Yeah, I'll take it. So, yeah, it's been quite the journey for me from let's say when I moved to Serbia, and when I came public, that was March 2022, and then April 2022 was Miami conference where I met Samson, and then by October I had fully transitioned it as a Bitcoiner working in a Bitcoin only company.
There we go, and that's some awesome stuff. But with the traditional finance, like aspect.
Oh yeah, sorry, you're asking that question. Yeah, I just went on a tangent. Yeah.
No, you're fine.
Blabbing away, but actually, no, yeah. It's great because now, so when I was working in my old company, there was a few conversations about Bitcoin. Of course, people talk about Bitcoin, and they're the chat forums at my old work, and a lot of it was quite negative towards Bitcoin. And that was when I was last there. There was still a lot of negativity. And having conversations with individuals, I was trying to teach them about the whole mining side of it. I was trying to teach them that it's actually a green thing and blah, blah, blah. And there's a lot of people that just weren't having it at all. And now here we are. And the biggest asset managers in the world have now essentially adopted it, and then I've offered it as a spot ETF. Oh, and another thing is my company, just before I left, some of the individuals I was working, even my team and another team I was working closely with were then given the orders from the high up to start working on creating an equity funds of Bitcoin and crypto exposed companies. And so from then they had to look at Bitcoin to some extent. So yeah, now they're all definitely looking at it, and they're all looking at, like, obviously there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be still looking at negatively, and that will always be the case. And there'll be a lot of smart people there that will never be fully convinced about Bitcoin. But I think the fact that it's being adopted by these your BlackRocks, and so it's basically opened up a lot of eyes, and people are actually now taking it a little bit more seriously. So it's for that angle, it's fantastic. Obviously, we spoke about the hoovering up of the coin other side, which is not great, but it's great for the price. So you can't have everything, but yeah, here we are today. Yeah.
No, I mean, 100%. And it seems like, you know, traditional finance is starting to come around a little bit. I mean, are you getting kind of that narrative as well?
Yeah,
like,
of course. So yeah, we've spoken to a few bigger banks. I can't name who, but there's interest there. and not just about Bitcoin spot ETFs, but what else can Bitcoin bring to the table? And we've spoken to some companies about the benefits of Liquid and how that layer two solution is actually a way of bridging the gap between Bitcoin and traditional finance. You can do a lot of what you do in traditional finance on Bitcoin Liquid. It's beautiful. I'm not the technical guy to explain it exactly, but I did write an article with the help of some tech guys to put my name on it. But Liquid is it's a great layer two solution, and there's going to be more solutions coming on being built on Bitcoin. Obviously, the Bitcoin itself, the main chain, is under a lot of stress, but you know it's proving that it's indestructible. We have all that ordinal debate right now: is it good? Is it bad? Blah blah blah. But whatever the case, it's happening, and it's causing us to then think about other solutions, and it's only going to drive adoption further, and not adoption, I say innovation further on layer two solutions. And I think that's really where the adoption will happen, because there'll be a certain point where Bitcoin will not be accessible to the general public on main chain anymore. It'll be too expensive. That's why I say to everyone over here, you know, consolidate your UTXOs, start managing your Bitcoin. If you're early to the game like you are today you're early, tomorrow you're still early, but in a few years' time, probably your UTXOs might be unspendable. So please look into how to consolidate them. Because I think their adoption, people might not even be able to buy main chain Bitcoin at some point. I think that will only happen in layer two or layer three solutions, whatever that might be. So we got to look further. And this is what us as Bitcoiners who've understood the technology early have to educate the rest of the world, the masses, so to speak, about this technology. Yes, we're lucky enough to get early in on main chain, but we have to know how to manage that, and we don't want to be in any have any surprises down the line. But yeah, going back to companies, I think our next step goal at Jan 3 is that we're gonna try and expand more and speak to as many companies, because thanks to the Bitcoin ETFs and thanks to more interest because of the bull run, we have had companies speaking to us, and so I think maybe we'll get more MicroStrategy companies out there. We recently have a partnership with Botev FC. This is a Bulgarian football team, the oldest football team in Bulgaria, actually. They're like, I don't know where they're sitting in their league. This is the top league in Bulgaria. Football, soccer, for you American guys out there. They are like, I think, sixth or seventh in the league. They're not a small team, but they've gone on to Bitcoin standard. We met in Madeira with the owner, and I got became friendly with the owner and his management team, and great guys. The owner, Anton Zingarev, he's a Russian, but he bought the team 2 years ago, and he's put it on a Bitcoin standard and looking in the long term. You know, you start stacking in Bitcoins there, and it's kind of what McCormack is doing with Bradford FC. So we're going to see more companies, teams, organizations, hopefully moving on to Bitcoin standards and lowering their time preference and looking at the long-term horizon and looking at ways of protecting their wealth and protecting their assets and making it better for the generations to come. And for football teams, it's a no-brainer. If you want to be able to afford good players, and this goes for any sports team, start stacking Bitcoin now. Lower your time preference, spend now. Doesn't matter if you're at the bottom of the league, because in 10 years' time, you're going to be richer than everyone else, and you can start buying the best players in the world. It's pretty logical to me.
Yeah, it's definitely pretty interesting. And you know, I mean, there's in Europe, it seems like there's a lot of, like, I guess, sports aspect of, you know, big teams getting on the Bitcoin standard, because I guess in the US, there's more of, like, I guess, a cap, right, that they have it for every single team. Like, they call it a salary cap, like in the NFL, football.
Oh, they have that in leagues as well. And they have various caps and ways you can't buy too many foreign players and all that. They try and introduce some fair play rules and things like that. But at the end of the day, how you manage your treasury is another issue. So keep the treasury, you know, but look at the treasury as you should do. Look at it like a treasury and go buy the thing that's should best be fitted, belong in your treasury, and that is Bitcoin. And even if you're against Bitcoin, then what you do is you buy the thing that, you know, you use Bitcoin as a hedge in case Bitcoin does well, so you still buy Bitcoin. So whatever direction you look at it, you know, Bitcoin is the solution. If you think it's an adversary, you want to buy some insurance to get Bitcoin, the best thing to buy is Bitcoin. So if you're managing a treasury right now, and if you're not looking at Bitcoin, then I suggest you start looking at Bitcoin. And if you're not, then you should be fired and someone replace you where they're looking at Bitcoin.
100%. And you mentioned something a little bit earlier about banks, and I kind of want to get into that, because I've had Caitlin Long on, obviously, of Custodia Bank, who brought up an interesting point where she thinks that banks are going to be more of like, I guess, like almost running like lightning nodes, right? Where there's like thousands of transactions going on every single day. And, you know, they get that little bit of, the fee associated with a lightning transaction.
They have to get a little barge in there somewhere. Yeah, of course. They're the ones who can afford to run these massive channels out there. We need some adoption like that. We need banks or organizations to start opening up more channels out there, or other layer two solutions, obviously ones that are good for Bitcoin. But I believe, given Bitcoin is an international international consensus, then we will choose the right solutions that we've always done. We won the block size war. We will win other wars in the future. So yes, banks will start to look at Bitcoin as the solution and not as an adversary. So yes, Caitlin Long is right about that. It's going to, banks who don't adopt Bitcoin or start to use Bitcoin are going to eventually lose out. And they will either lose out if we start to go down the tyrannical route of CBDCs, because that cuts the bank out completely. So they'll be left with an option at some point. There's either look at Bitcoin where people want their money to be, what money is meant to be, or you can go, or you can start supporting the route of tyranny and you become obsolete. So you have a choice there. And start looking at how to run a bank in a more fair, in a fair practice, more in a one-to-one, not in this fractional reserve lending or banking situation. And you can act as custodians. There's already people acting as custodians. Not everyone will want to hold their keys. Not everyone is responsible enough to be sovereign, as many of us want us to be. You know, there's still a lot of people out there who like the system for what it is, and will always be comfortable with other people looking after themselves. And that's what one of the major problems of why we are here today and talking about Bitcoin and why Bitcoin is needed. But, you know, we have to cater to those people. And I think some banks will start to offer services that will allow people to hold Bitcoin, hold Bitcoin, allow banks to hold Bitcoin for them. But at least they give some sort of semi-sovereignty where they are not in full control of their keys, but they are able to use it on some sort of layer three solution or something like that. I think that's an interesting case in the future, really, because, you know, people want downloading, you know, writing down your keys and being responsible. That is a step too far for some people. Not for all of us, not for a lot of us like me and you, but for a lot of other people that haven't been introduced to technology yet, then they're going to find that uncomfortable. But, you know, in the future, that's in the next, I'm certainly talking about the next 10 years, that's the case. But as kids grow up, as the next generation comes along, we're going to make sure we educate them about what Bitcoin is, and they will start to understand about the need to being self-sovereign and having you having access to your own keys. And that is what will hopefully come out on top in the future. But between now and then, yeah, you're going to get a lot of banks hopefully will help to drive adoption. And then over time, people will then want to say, no, I just want the real thing. I want to have control of my life completely and be financially sovereign.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I think, you know, I mean, obviously there's always been a place for banks, but, you know, now everything's essentially majority digital, right? Majority of people just like use a credit card or a debit card or whatnot and kind of have their banks. But, you know, it wasn't too long ago where everybody was kind of going to the ATM and pulling out cash every single day, and like merchants were just accepting cash. And that was kind of like of the norm, right? I mean, I guess maybe in the past like 20 or so years, with the rise of credit cards and the popularity of that. And now it's like a lot of businesses, especially in like the US and, you know, growing developing nations, they only accept card, like very few.
Yes, which is kind of scary. We see countries like Sweden that have gone pretty much cashless. And that is scary because in the flick of a switch, they can go to CBDCs. And yes, and I like cash. I think cash is better than cards. But I use cards all the time. But I know I have Bitcoin. But some people don't have Bitcoin. And this is the issue we have. I have in my country here in Serbia is that I think Bitcoin is ready, is ripe for people are ripe to understand the technology of Bitcoin here. But over here, we have a cash friendly society. They know they need the privacy of cash because they know what fiscalizing their lives are being fiscalized by the state and having all their transactions looked at by the state. They don't want that. And so that's why cash is still king here. But that's why they look at Bitcoin and they see it in a negative perspective because they see it as too good to be true, maybe controlled or created by the CIA or whatever, or the MI6 or whatever place, or the the NSA or something like that. But then once they understand that it's not that, actually, even if the NSA did create it, it's out there and no one can control it. It's a consensus system and everyone benefits by just joining it. Their cynicism of the system, of the state, of the system, and their skeptics is already means that they're halfway there of understanding what Bitcoin is. Once they understand what Bitcoin is, I think it's the leap of embracing a digital technology, and I think they like the physical aspect of cash, like gold. Like people just can't get rid of that, you know, can't give up on their gold. I understand the case for gold, but gold would just lead to another fiat standard. Gold is just a heavy dumb rock at the end of the day that needs to be secured with more money. And you know, the transacting gold over, you know, the saying is you transact for gold 50 times it's the price of gold itself. Gold is heavy to bring around. You know, you're not gonna, how are you gonna bring gold around with you? How you have to trust it with someone else, and it's that trust aspect that is what instantly kills the gold bug narrative. So yeah, so cash as well. Cash is subject to inflation. Cash is it's your cash. You can hide it on the mattress. You can do what you want, but it's subject to inflation. And the government can then one day decide to change the cash, and you have to then exchange it and expose yourself. And cash is it's not really owned by you, and it's a worthless piece of paper. So Bitcoin combines the best of both worlds, and it's a no-brainer. So I think with a bit of time and a bit of work, which I'm trying to do here in Serbia, is educate people about Bitcoin. There's good initiatives happening. One of them is the Bitcoin Hub 21 that opened up in Belgrade a year or so ago. And it's a great space in the center town of Belgrade. And it's like a co-op working space where people go there to work every day, or people come to visit from around the world, or people go there for events, for lectures about Bitcoin, meetings and so forth. There's a big halving party happening there on the 19th and 20th of April. It's a great space, and this is with the adoption in Serbia it's happening. It's people are talking about it, and we have a lot of talent in Serbia, developers. We have a very good quantitative mindset here. You know, you have the next Tesla will probably come from Serbia again. So a lot of good developers here. A lot of them are working on shit coins, but a lot of good core developers are living in Serbia. A lot of them are keeping it secret, which is keeping a low pro, which is fantastic. But I think the Serbia has a lot to offer to Bitcoin, and Bitcoin has a lot to offer to Serbia, like it does everywhere around the world.
Yeah, and I think that you know, the growing movements of Bitcoin all over the globe is outstanding. But you mentioned a little bit about how you get a little bit of backlash when you bring up Bitcoin, or you're kind of like publicly talking about it.
Yes.
Why do you still think that there's still, I guess, like the negative narrative around Bitcoin, and like what kind of FUD are they trying to spread during this potential
bull market? Well, it was just the fact that I have a big following, decent following on Twitter and Instagram, and you know, my wife and I, we've been working hard to try and bring the image up of the Karo Georgievich dynasty, and we're going around the country. We've been doing this before I was a public Bitcoiner, and you know, we've getting a lot of, you know, good attention. We've got our foundation that we've just opened up, that's looking at projects that are focused on cultural heritage, that are focused on trying to bring back talent for talent to remain, and trying to focus on local things. And we're popular people here. I don't like, you know, don't want to blow my own trumpet. But then all of a sudden I start speaking about Bitcoin, and there's a lot of people there who don't understand Bitcoin, who see it as a joke, who categorize it like NFTs or cryptos or something like that. So they're obviously going to be negative towards it, and a lot of people will make themselves known on that, about that, so on, especially on Twitter. You know, Serbian Twitter is not a kind place. And I've seen all sorts of comments coming out. So whenever I post anything about Bitcoin or share anything about Bitcoin, I do get quite a bit of a backlash. But, you know, it's to be expected. And I probably need to change my strategy a little bit and start maybe working on getting some more adoption happening here, and also getting some more people talking about it more openly and so forth, which we're doing. Recently, there was a conference organized by Alex, who runs the biggest crypto exchange. He's a Bitcoiner, but he sells other things on ECD. It's like the Serbia's only crypto exchange. And we spoke to a bunch of corporations and people who work in treasury here, getting them interested about Bitcoin. And that was a success. And we're going to have another occasion, and this time invite more people, because there was a lot of interest there. So yeah, slowly, I think more and more people will accept it here. And as I said, cash king society. But your cash is not affording much these days. You know, inflation here is a problem. There's a big cost of living crisis, like there is in most parts of the world, in all the world, really. I've really felt it, you know, since I moved here since 2020. Since 2020 to now, it's amazing how far the dinar goes. It's horrible to see. And I come from a position of somewhat privileged. You know, I can't imagine what the suffering that people are going through. And you don't see it so much in Belgrade. Belgrade, there's money, there's wealth, but then when you step outside of Belgrade and go to the countryside, you see that there's a lot of hardship out there. And these people are very cash orientated as well. They want to be private. They want to be in possession of what they own. But I think with a bit of time and a bit of education, a bit of awareness, and as our foundation starts to grow, we will start to spread what the message of Bitcoin and how it can change their future for the better, and their children's future. Because really, it's Serbia's a family orientated society here, and people really are protective over their children. So there's nothing better in the world that protects your children than Bitcoin.
That's outstanding. And, you know, you work with a lot of nation states, and obviously, you know, the Bitcoin mantra is like a long time preference. But before I let you go, I want you to make a prediction here. Do you think that we're going to get any more nation states kind of coming on to, whether it's like a Bitcoin standard, or, you know, whether it's making Bitcoin legal tender, making more tax friendly havens? Do you think we're going to see that in the rest of this year, or maybe even like, you know, early next year? Where we're going to start to see, I guess, more nation state adoption before, shortly after.
I think you will see some different forms of adoption. I think one of them is more mining. We've seen examples like that surprise us, like the Kingdom of Bhutan, who have been mining Bitcoin for several years now, who just all of a sudden last summer that they've been mining Bitcoin through their hydroelectric capacity. And now they're ramping up those efforts. We saw the Kingdom of Oman as well. They've invested $1.1 billion into mining projects. So I think we'll see more countries announcing mining efforts around the world. Legal tenders, I believe you'll see some smaller countries, more nimble countries starting to talk about it, and maybe starting to allow citizens to transact in it and allow it. But a legal tender in El Salvador, that's we just have to say we'll have to wait to see what happens with this bull market. But that's the tough one, because that really is, you know, adopting it as legal tender outright is it's great, and it's not what Bitcoin needs. Bitcoin doesn't really care about legal tender, but it really does help with adoption on it really helps the people, whether if you adopt it as a legal tender and people are able to use it freely, then they will start to learn about it, and then it will start to protect their futures. And it's all about making a better place for our children. That's what it's all about. That's why I'm here. I'm here for the long game. You know, that's what monarchy is about. We look at the long perspective. We want to make good decisions today that last for generations to come, and sound money is one of them.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, like, you know, the more touch points kind of people get, the more they're open to it, and then the easier they are to kind of orange pill and adopt them.
Right.
But yeah, you've been very generous with your time, so I appreciate you coming on the show with me. Why don't you tell everybody where they could find out more about Jan 3 and, like, kind of the adoption that you guys are spreading around globally?
Sure, of course. Well, you can find me, my Twitter is PrincePhilip1. You can write it down. I mean, it's with no E and an F. I'm also found at Jan3.com, not .com, Jan3.com, at Jan3.com, but then we have Jan3.com website. You can find me on Instagram as well, and you can find Jan3 on Instagram, and I think you can find Jan3 on, on Nostra. I'm on Nostra, but I'm not using it yet, even though I've got an account. I will use it eventually. we'll post it on the when this goes out.
Yeah, 100%. I'll put all that in the show notes as well. So Philip, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Brandon, it's been a pleasure. Great chatting to you.